Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. There is so much going on and a jam-packed program today. I want to start out getting into this question of, do Americans, and of course this includes Democrats, but I'm not speaking just about Democrats and the Democratic Party, do Americans have the will to actually do battle with the, metaphorically, politically speaking, with wealthy right-wing authoritarians and the movement that they are promoting? I'm going to get to that in just a moment. Secondly, how do we memorialize January 6th? There's a big discussion going on, you know, among members of Congress, among people in the news media. You know, what do we do? I mean, you know, what's the logo for this thing? Is it, you know, like when Ronald Reagan cut a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages when Jimmy Carter was president to destroy the Carter presidency? You know, we tied yellow ribbons around trees and they sang songs about them. And, you know, it was tie a yellow ribbon around. Well, actually, I think the song preceded the hostage taking. But you get my point. How do we memorialize January 6th? I ask that question. And also, Louise and I have our own little war about Christmas. When do you take down the tree? I say the first day of March. Louise says the first day after the new year. And some folks in our community, in our neighborhood, took down their Christmas trees or their Christmas decorations. Obviously, this is for those of you who do this. You know, took them down the day after Christmas. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. This is like, these are such wonderful anchors to happy times in my childhood. I want to hang on to them as long as possible. What do you do at your house? So we can talk about that. There's just a lot. Oh, and some very, very positive news, some very positive changes coming too. I'll share that with you in just a moment. You know, but my first question, it looks to me, and I was impressed to see Brian Stelter use this word on his Sunday show on CNN, his show about the media. It looks to me like the word fascism is back. Not just the word, actually the concept that fascism is back. And that it's going to be on the ballot this fall, this November. It'll be under the R category, the Republican category, but fascism nonetheless. You know, when fascism first reared its ugly head in Europe back in the 1920s, and in Japan, by the way, in the 1920s, it signaled a coming war. And now we've got this newer and slicker form of, I call it neo-fascism, neo being, you know, from the Greek for new, the new fascism here in the United States. And, you know, is it going to bring a similar crisis? I think, personally, that at this moment, we in America stand, and frankly, around the world, the free world, stand at the threshold of momentous change. Genuinely momentous change. I mean, it's rarely discussed in this frame, but I think that the next two elections, the one this year and the one in 2024, are pretty much certainly going to define what form of government the United States will have for at least a generation. Are we going to have a democratic republic like Ben Franklin told the wife of Philadelphia's mayor back in the day? A republic, ma'am, if you can keep it? Or are we going to have Trumpy fascism? Frankly, I think that every day goes by diminishes the chances of Trumpy fascism. This is my good news for 2022. But it is still a force to be reckoned with, and it has not gone away. And in many ways, it's reconsolidating. So what we have right now is the Democratic Party, at least institutionally committed to America, finally realizing this, you know, this vision that was laid out in our founding documents, you know, that all people are born, you know, with the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the governments are instituted among us, among people, to protect those rights. And the Democratic Party has rejected gerrymanders. Michigan, for example, is going to have their first non-gerrymandered map, which is going to be very, very interesting how this changes the races for the Michigan House and Senate, and frankly, for members of Congress of Michigan. So that's a good thing, ending gerrymanders. And of course, you know, there's legislation to do that as well sitting in the Senate. And voter suppression, you know, Democrats are committed to ending voter suppression. Now, I say institutionally because we've got two Democrats, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who so far have been kind of holding up the show. But I have a feeling this thing is going to get through, that the John Lewis Voting Rights Act and that the Freedom to Vote Act, at the very least, are going to pass in the next week or two. We'll see. I may be wrong. But even if they don't pass, it will be, if they don't pass, it'll be because one or two Democrats decided to block them, essentially on behalf of right-wing billionaires and particular industries, or, you know, out of, you know, some bizarre loyalty to the Republican Party. But the Democratic Party institutionally is committed now to democracy, which is a big deal. I mean, the Democratic Party was committed to this in the 60s with the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, but then they kind of lost their way in the 80s, the 90s, the first decade of the 2000s, and now they're back. I see this as a good thing. At the same time, the Republican Party, with the exception of Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, has just doubled down on Trumpy neo-fascism. So, number one, what do you think that's going to mean for the elections coming up in 2022? Is this going to be a blowout? I mean, are the Democrats just going to overwhelm the Republicans? Because the rest of America is getting, you know, how toxic the GOP has become? Or does it mean that their voter suppression efforts are going to be successful? And they're gerrymandering and they're going to hang on to power and stuff like that? I'm inclined to view this with optimism. But I'm also enough of a historian to know that things have not always turned out for the best. That said, we suffered this incredible attack on our democracy on January 6th. And we're still here. And that cannot be said of other countries. When Russia, when Hungary, when Poland, when the Philippines, when India, when all of these countries that have now essentially become oligarchies, when they confronted the possibility of remaining democracies or strengthening democracy, they flinched. And that's frankly what I think is going to be on the ballot this fall. And I think it's going to be a big deal. And I am hopeful that fascism will be defeated in America, and I'm more than happy to play my role in seeing that happen. It's what wakes, you know, gets me out of bed in the mornings. How about you? What do you think? How is this going to play out? I'll give you a little more information on this in just a minute. And both the good news of what's happening in the States and the bizarre news coming out of the GOP right after this break. So, just to kind of put a point on it, with regard to the Christmas tree thing, Sean was telling me that, was it your Irish grandmother? Yeah. Great-grandmother said that you can't take down your Christmas tree, that the official day to take down your Christmas tree is January 6th, because that's the 12th night of Christmas, okay? and that if you fail to do it on January 6th, you have to keep it up until Easter, or it's bad luck. This was your great-grandmother. Okay, cool. Wow, I had no idea. Easter, Louise. Easter. Okay. I think I already laid that out. I don't need to do it all over again. So far, I have prevailed, right? We have this little Christmas tree. It's only about 3 feet tall. It's a scraggly little artificial tree that we've been hauling around for about 15 years. And it's a Charlie Brown tree. And it's still up. And I want it to stay up until March 1st, but I don't think I'm going to win that one. What say you? Picking up your phone calls here. Francis in Sherwood. Hey, Francis, what's on your mind today?
Yes, exactly that. Since January 6th is Epiphany, I think we should use it to remember to get truth and justice out, especially truth, and not just on the attack of the Capitol, but like your industrial pollution, global warming, et cetera, for the year. Just recommit to truth.
Amen.
And it's also the time to take down the Christmas tree, yes.
Okay. All right. One vote for January 6th.
That's all.
Great. Uh-huh. Francis, thank you very much. That was great. Uh-huh. Appreciate the call. And how do we memorialize January 6th? This is a much larger question. And I think that it probably we need to be remembering it the way that we remember, like, Pearl Harbor Day. Now, do we make it a national day of mourning or a national day of remembrance the way that we have with Pearl Harbor Day or the way that we have with 9/11? I think we should. Even during the Civil War, the Capitol was not laid siege. The last time the Capitol of the United States was attacked was during the War of 1812. And while they actually, the Capitol wasn't even attacked on that day because it was empty at the time. They did attack the White House. Dolly Madison, James Madison was the president at the time. And he was out leading troops. He was the only president to ever lead troops in battle. And he was out leading troops against the British and the French Canadians in the War of 1812. And his wife took this picture of George Washington and rolled it up and stuck it in her dress, is the mythology, and fled the White House and saved that painting, that famous painting. In other words, this literally, I mean, this is even worse than the Civil War, not in terms of American deaths and things like that, but the attack on the Capitol building didn't even get that big. So I think, frankly, that this should be a national day of remembrance and mourning. What say you? We'll get to that. I told you that there was really great news. This is for 2022. These are all changes that happened in Republican states. You've got a whole bunch of Republican states that are doing tax cuts for wealthy people. I'll get into that. But some good stuff happening in blue states. $15 an hour minimum wage for most workers in California and many downstate counties in New York starting this week. Minimum wage of $14.25 in Massachusetts, $12.75 in Maine, $12.50 in Maryland, $13 in New Jersey, $11.50 in New Mexico, $12.75 in Oregon. By the way, I'm getting this from the Progressives Everywhere Substack page, substack.com. Minimum wage is going to jump in 35 cities and counties as well, all under Democratic control. It's now $15 or more in two states and 31 cities and counties. By the end of this year, that'll be 44 cities and counties. In Connecticut, workers can now apply for up to 12 weeks of paid leave. This is funded by a small payroll tax. New York's paid family leave is going to become more robust, guaranteeing 67% of your salary for up to 3 months to care for a sick child or family member. Payments max out at $1,068 a week. In Massachusetts, payments like that max out at $1,084 a week. Washington State, which does not have a state income tax, just got a new capital gains tax. A 7% tax on incomes over $250,000. It's illegal for employers in Illinois to lock workers into non-compete clauses if they earn less than $75,000 a year. New Jersey is launching a financial literacy pilot program. I mean, it's just cool stuff happening all over the place. Amazon facilities in California, by law, can no longer use algorithms to control how often you can go to the bathroom, breaks and all these kinds of things. While there are major tax cuts being handed out to the wealthiest people in states controlled by Republicans, in Arkansas, for example, the state income tax for the richest people in Arkansas, I guess that would be the Walton family, went from 5.9% down to 4.9%. While Arkansas is throwing a bone to their poor people, if you're low income, you get a one-time $60 tax credit. Wow. Yeah, that's balanced. In criminal justice in Illinois, all police officers have to wear body cameras. This is the Safety Act, which passed. It makes it easier to fire bad cops. It ends suspending driver's licenses because you haven't paid fines. Minnesota, same thing. You can't suspend driver's licenses based on fines. Similar law went into effect at the end of last year in Nevada. The use of no-knock warrants cut back. Here in Oregon, they've created a standardized interview and background check for police departments. Portland has a new civilian-led oversight, police oversight board. In North Carolina, cops have to go through a psychological evaluation before being given a gun and a badge. And so there's some good stuff happening all around the country.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Dave in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, Tom. On January 6th, I think that should either be called like the National Day of Shame or call it Insurrection Day. You know, that.
I'm concerned if you call it Insurrection Day that there's a whole bunch of people who are going to start making flags and waving them and saying, yeah, this is our day.
And speaking of flags, perhaps they should fly it upside down on that day, too, you know?
Yeah.
Or on the calendars where they show, you know, the different holidays with the flag, they should either have that date gray or something, or an upside-down flag.
But well, yeah, the upside-down flag is a distress call, as I'm sure you know, which is why you're suggesting
right.
it. Again, I'm worried that that would be co-opted by people on the right, but I do think that a national day of mourning is appropriate. You know, mourning and the first attack on our Capitol building. Really, in the history of the United States, I mean, this is.
Hey, Tom, but
yeah.
How would you get this thing? How would you get this law passed? We can't even get B3 passed, you know. And I'm sure
yeah.
Manchin would fight that one too, because you're embarrassing his Republican buddies.
Yeah, yeah. They over on Democratic Underground, the cartoon today. They do a political cartoon every day, and the cartoon is Kevin McCarthy on TV in 1963, and he's like, you know, well, why didn't Kennedy duck? You know, why are they asking about my friend Lee Harvey Oswald when they should be asking, why didn't Kennedy duck? It's like, yes,
wow.
It's like, this is the Republicans. I'm with you, Dave. Dave, thank you so much for the
All
call.
All right, be well and a happy new year to
thank you
and the family and everybody.
Thank you. Back to you, Dave. Thank you. Rhonda in Charleston, West Virginia. Hey, Rhonda, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Happy new year.
Thank you.
Have two things, one kind of funny and one not so funny. The first one, I have the unfortunate circumstance of my birthday being January 6th.
Oh, my.
I celebrated my 60th birthday last year, and you know how they were talking about how all the agencies didn't know this was going to happen. My husband, who used to be a professional chef, made me for breakfast, you'll like this, Eggs Benedict Arnold, Trump toast, and Mussolini mimosas. This was before it happened. We were watching like 4 hours before it happened, like, we know this is going to happen today.
Oh, yeah. Well, Trump was advertising it well. Apparently, the only people in the United States who didn't know were the FBI and the National Guard.
Yeah, evidently. That one serious thing, it kind of ruined my holiday, however. I am from West Virginia, from Charleston. Got on the Charleston Gazette, I think it was Christmas Day, Joe Manchin was named West Virginian of the Year.
Oh, that's interesting. Joe Manchin actually has done a fair amount of good stuff, and he is, you know, the vote that gave control, or, you know, arguably, gave control of the Senate to the Democrats, and you know, he's not always terrible.
That's true. Unfortunately, I think that, you know, a lot of the constituents that voted for him in West Virginia would really have been benefited from the Build Back Better plan, and I'm really hoping it still comes through.
I think it was
a little disheartening. Most of our major newspapers are owned by the same company, and so I was a little disheartened. I'm just wishing he could, you know, get that last vote. And you're right, he is not all bad.
Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping that comes through.
Yeah, me too. I suspect, well, we'll see. I mean, I'm seeing these tantalizing little drops, not to sound too much like QAnon followers, but, you know, there's the little news drops that, you know, they've come to some sort of a thing with the Senate parliamentarian, Elizabeth, what's her name, Montgomery, as I know, that's the actress, Elizabeth McCormick or something. They've come to some kind of an agreement. In fact, Elizabeth Montgomery, Louise and I have been on Saturday mornings watching Bewitched reruns. But anyhow,
there you go.
But they've come to an agreement with her that they can do more than one reconciliation bill this year. We'll see. But I think that's, you know, if that's true, that's interesting. And then this thing that, you know, Schumer is going to propose changes to the filibuster. So we'll see. But I'm hopeful. I'm always hopeful.
We could all make our eggs Benedict Arnold on January 6th.
There you go. The official eggs Benedict Arnold Day. Rhonda, thank you very much for the call. It's nice to hear from
you. Thank you.
And happy birthday this week. Mark in Valley, Washington. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Well, Tom, I got to disagree with you. I think you were right that we dodged a bullet, but I think that the Democrats, at least not all of them, but the ones that are in control, are not putting the ample level of seriousness to this, urgency to this, and that the Republicans are making it so it doesn't matter how we vote. So even if we come out to the polls in massive numbers, and a lot of these crucial states, they're just going to say, no, we're not putting them delegates in. We're putting delegates in for Trump or DeSantis or whoever.
As far as I know, Mark, the only actual swing state, as defined by the results of the last election, where the Republicans have really put into place rigorous voter suppression laws, and we can change elections, we don't like laws, is Georgia. Every other state that has done this is a solid red state that, you know, the outcome of the election isn't going to much matter. Or am I missing something? I realize Texas has,
But Texas is trying to do it, and there's a whole bunch of other states that are trying to push it through.
Yeah.
And they're mostly all red legislatures, so I have a feeling that it's going to get pushed through before the election, because the Democrats are not putting the sense of urgency needed to stop this.
Yeah. I would say for the last year, I don't disagree with you. I do believe that the pressure is on, and I think that Schumer is going to get this voting rights legislation passed in the next week or two. I have no inside information on this. It's just a sense, but you know, he has got so much pressure on him right now. But Mark,
As far as the FBI goes, you know, that's the fascist bureau of intimidation throughout their history. So I don't see them jumping up to stop Trump.
I'm concerned that there's a bunch of Trump holdovers who are still in the Justice Department. And in fact, I'm not just concerned. I mean, we know that there are Trump holdovers who are still in the Justice Department in some fairly high positions. And that troubles me. Again, we'll just have to wait and see how it shakes out. Thanks a lot for the call. Bill in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, you were talking about a memorial earlier, and I've called the show a couple times because I calculated the height of the what would be the COVID monument compared to the Vietnam monument. Mm-hmm. And if it was in the same footprint, which is 500 feet long, which is longer than the city block, it would be 14 stories tall now with the number of people who have died.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Right. And just quickly, I figured out the theory of everything. Equality equals freedom times liberty squared.
Oh, you're gonna have to fill me in on that in more detail on another occasion, Bill. But that sounds like a great starting point. Bill, thanks for the call. It's always nice to hear from you. Well, and thanks for listening to us on SiriusXM. Dennis in Aptos, California. Hey, Dennis, what's on your mind today?
Boy, a lot. I want to start with the fact that Manchin gave an impromptu press conference. I didn't really like what he was saying. You know,
I saw it on my monitor, but I didn't hear what he said. What?
You know, he kind of reiterated again that the Voting Rights Act needs some Republicans to vote for it. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
You know, good luck with that.
Yeah, no, their official strategy is turning America into Hungary. It's a single-party rule. They're not going to go along with anything the Democrats want to do.
Somebody needs, and, you know, I don't know how reporters could actually ask a question and kind of emphasize that.
Right.
Because, you know, he's clueless or he's just doesn't want to admit facts.
Right.
You know, regarding Hungary, too, I mean, you know, they're fascist light right now, kind of like Spain and Portugal were before and after World War II.
Well,
actually.
Orban just had a guy arrested for posting on his personal Facebook page that he, in his opinion, Orban was a dictator. He just had this guy arrested, like, last week.
Yeah, you know, he's a danger. You know, Trump liked Putin. He liked Erdogan. He likes Orban. He likes Bolsonaro, who acts like a dictator down in Brazil, Duterte in the Philippines.
Yeah.
You know, my dad, who died in 2016 in February, he was coherent enough in the prior months when Trump was running for president, and he saw one of Trump's speeches, one of his rallies, and he said, this guy sounds like Mussolini or Hitler. You know, because he lived through that.
Yep.
You know, he was in America during the 1930s as a kid, as a teenager, and he saw what was going on. And anybody who's that age right now in their 80s and 90s, if they like Trump, it's like, what? Weren't you alive? Don't you remember Hitler's speeches, Mussolini's speeches? Don't you remember all that?
Well, one of the key pieces to the success of the rise of Hitler, Mussolini, and Franco, and others, I mean, Pinochet in Chile and others, Putin in Russia, et cetera, it was seizing the press,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that is what is going on right here, right now. It started with right-wing talk radio, frankly, in my opinion. And you know, now you've got three right-wing television networks.
Yeah, and they're going to be covering Trump on January 6th. And by the way, my Christmas decorations went down on the 1st, but January 6th is the 12th day of Christmas.
Yeah.
So I think after January 7th is probably a really good time to take down Christmas decorations.
Yeah, I think you're right, Dennis. I think you're right.
Yeah. And I hate it when people put them up before December 1st.
Really?
Late November.
Really?
This should be a lie. You got to wait until December 1st.
I'm like, you know, the day after Halloween, but I don't do that. I mean, you know, my wife will not allow it.
Exactly.
Okay, so she's the sane one in the family. Dennis, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you.
Right.
Have a good one.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our book today in the Tom Hartman Book Club is The Division of Light and Power by Dennis Kucinich. And this is from chapter one. It's titled Christmas Blackout. Jesus loves you. The words swirled in the crisp air of the glistening snow globe known as Cleveland, Ohio. If in these wintry mists it was redemption you sought, you found it in the ministry of the streets with Reverend Orris Price, a living, breathing, holy card version of Jesus Christ, with dark olive skin, reddish beard, piercing blue eyes, and a baritone voice which rose above the surging Christmas holiday crowd. He called out randomly to the weary shoppers. Their interest wasn't in salvation, but consumption, the search for tokens of affection. They were preoccupied with dazzling holiday lights, distracted by the elegant display windows of the May Company, and entranced by the angelic carolers singing above the recorded music coming from the department stores. Undaunted, the Reverend Price looked upwards, a pale yellow streetlight casting a touch of glory upon his face. He extended his arms toward the heavens in exultation. Jesus loves you! Jesus loves you, Mary! Joyously, he flung a morsel of grace into the snow sky. It descended gently and touched a child of God named Mary, whose backward-looking gaze was caught by the all-seeing eye of Reverend Price, a divine gotcha moment at his corner tabernacle on Euclid Avenue at Ontario Street. Mary, give your life to Jesus, striking his name with a vocal thunderbolt. Mary was transfixed, her eyes on God's messenger. She received Reverend Price's nod as a beatitude, then smiled and turned to catch the crowd hurrying across Ontario Street into the headlong rush to prepare for Christmas 1969. The Reverend Price, animated apostle of the abbreviated epistle, clapped his thick, worn Bible and elevated it as a sacrament. Spirit shook his body. His eyes widened with joy as he called out to another soul, passionately dispensing deliverance to the procession of shoppers, whose only interest was in waiting for the traffic light to change so they could worship at the altar of the god Xmas. Snow flurried as my bride Helen and I hurried past the Bible-thumping Reverend Price and coursed with the crowd into Higbee's department store. Later, just moments after we exited with a bag of gifts, a power failure hit downtown, and Christmas disappeared. Helen looked at me surprised and frowned. "What's that?" "The city's lights seem to be going out a lot," I observed. "Maybe it's the weather," she offered. "I don't know, Helen. We've been having blackouts no matter the weather." When the lights go out, what can you do? You wait for them to come on. That's life in the big city, except I had just been elected to the Cleveland City Council, and I had every intention of showing that things were going to be different. I went to a payphone to call the city's light system, and after several attempts, got through. "Division of Light and Power," the harried voice answered. "This is Dennis Kucinich. I'm a new councilman from Ward 7. Could you please tell me why the lights are out? It's 4 days before Christmas, and ho." Hold on, the man growled. "You're the kid who beat Belinsky." Yes, that was me at age 23, often mistaken for a paperboy in his early teens when I campaigned door to door. I defeated the Ukrainian Robin Hood, John Taras Belinsky, on my second time around with the help of the Cleveland police, Paul DeGrandis, and the deputy director of the Cuyahoga County Board of Elections, and 6'6", 320-pound Scott Sikorsky. Scott was a campaign worker and a high school classmate who, after several failed attempts by election supervisors to get those inside a polling place in Ward 7 to open the door, tore it clean off its hinges. It was there an hour earlier in the basement of St. Augustine Church, Belinsky's ward machine, which officiated inside the polling station, ejecting our designated witnesses, barricaded the windows and doors, then silently, desperately proceeded to count the paper ballots creatively until he could come up with enough votes for Belinsky to win. Once Scott opened the door, the police and county election officials rushed inside like it was an Elliot Ness raid of a bootleg joint. The ballots were impounded and taken by police car to a secure place at the Cuyahoga County Board of Elections. The official tally would take place at the elections board, where I won by 16 votes in a recount. So that's how I became the councilman of the neighborhood where I went to high school, where church spires and pipe organ smokestacks reached to a smudged sky. A neighborhood populated by a steely league of nations who spoke Polish, Greek, Slovak, Ukrainian, Russian, Arabic, Spanish, and occasionally English. A neighborhood of narrow streets lined with old men wearing white shirts and suspenders, and old ladies wearing babushkas and carrying shopping bags that dangled just above their socks, paraded up and down the small commercial district on Professor Avenue. It was on that very same street in August of 1960, the St. John Cantonus Jayhawks varsity football squad gathered on the school steps for teen pictures. As a 13-year-old, 4'9", 98-pound, third-string varsity quarterback, I was being prepared for a career in Cleveland politics with every blindside tackle, sack, forearm in the face, bell ringer, dirt-eating episode known as the game. As the last boy on the team, I practiced a gritty resilience against physical odds. The book, The Division of Light and Power, by Dennis J. Kucinich. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. And welcome back. Carol in Valencia, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Carol, what's on your mind today?
Hey, good morning, Tom. You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene came out last week saying she thinks the country should get a divorce.
Yeah, I know. And I'm thinking,
well, you know what? I think we should look at this. Now, let me tell you why.
Okay,
there's
go for
two
it.
Books, there's two books that really bend my thinking. Mm-hmm. One is American Nations, which I know you know about how he poses that we're not one nation.
Yeah, isn't it titled The Nations of America?
No, American Nations.
Oh, okay.
N-A-T-I-O-N-S. He has a wonderful hypothesis that we are 11 nations with cultural, very unique cultural patterns.
Example, I've read the book. It came out in the mid to late 90s, as I recall.
No, 2011.
Oh, okay. This must be something new. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Oh, this is a wonderful book. And his follow-up is American Character.
Okay.
But anyway, the whole construct is that we are culturally very unique in the regions we came from. The Yankee land is the northern, the Puritans, and they became the well-educated Bostonian, very citizen-like kinds of people. Right. The New York Dutch influence, very commercial, very, very liberal, very accepting. Jeffersonian, Virginian, Maryland were the nobility, you know, the second sons who came and always had the genteel nobility. Then you had what he calls
That's okay, Carol. You don't have to recap the whole book. I'm familiar with the regional differences.
What we have is the Civil War was fought by the Deep South, which were the Barbados, cruel and vicious Englishmen who really brought slavery in, right, and had created this oligarchy.
So, Carol, we have 40 seconds. What's the point you're trying to make?
Okay. All right. So here's the thing. We have been fighting with the oligarchs before the Civil War.
Of course.
It's always been a fight. And the reason we had the Civil War was that commercially, the South and the North, said, we need the South to stay because we need their cotton. We can't let them
New York City tried to secede with the South.
I know.
Yeah.
I know, because they tried to say, well, we're going to go because we're going to get the commerce no matter
right.
where it comes from.
Right.
So if it goes to Britain, fine. So they said that. And then the other book I have just finished, which you read from a couple days ago, was
Nancy MacLean's book. It's brilliant, Democracy and Change.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That is so important.
Yeah, I agree.
What we have, we're still fighting the Civil War.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I read an amazing book over the weekend. It was called Rich Man's War. And it's about how there were fewer than 1,000 families in the South who drove the entire Confederate war. It was amazing. Carol, thank you. Tom in Astoria. Hey, Tom, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Hey, thank you, Tom. Glad to talk to you, a longtime listener and a reader of your few books. Many books that you've written. I just wanted to bring up that I am the direct descendant of Captain Peter Dickerson, who owned the Dickerson Tavern in Morristown, New Jersey.
Wait a minute. This ties to what? What am I missing?
Several calls and conversations ago, they were talking about the Benedict Arnold trial.
Right.
And I was just going to bring up that in my research and my family and whatnot, DNA testing, I found out that I was tied to that when I was watching a TV show called Turn, and they showed the Dickerson Inn where Benedict Arnold's trial was held.
Oh, wow. And, how about that?
Yeah. It's been a real interesting journey of finding out my family all the way back to Norfolk, England.
Yeah, so your family helped prosecute Benedict Arnold.
Yeah. And
not bad.
And reading the details, I'm still digging into what actually happened at the trial. How he got kicked off and his ego got blunted, and he went, even the colonel, the people, what's happened today has happened then, is that the colonel, he was told, don't fire on the British coming up to get the West Point Academy, and he said, the hell with you, I'm blowing them out of the water. Oh, excuse me, I didn't mean to say hell.
That's
on the
okay.
air. It's been a real interesting journey that I've had two members of my fourth and fifth great-grandparents. One was a colonel in the Colonial Army, or the Continental Army, and then Captain Peter Dickerson. He passed away in 1780 when all that was just finishing up, and relatives were still running the tavern at the time. So yeah. I'm finding a lot of details. It's been real interesting.
It's amazing stuff. My mom was real into genealogy, and she got me into, because of her research, got me and my brothers. I'm not sure if any of my brothers are keeping up their membership, but I've kept mine up in the Sons of the American Revolution, because I have an ancestor, his name was Carter, who actually fought in the American Revolution, it's fascinating stuff. I don't know beyond that.
It is. Our relatives may have fought together.
It's not inconceivable, Tom. That's a great story. And thanks a lot for the call and for sharing it with us. That was what you wanted to share, right?
That and as after sitting in the virtual green room and listening to all the stories going past, I had so much things thinking about. You got my mind spinning again for many other things that are going on in my life.
You're welcome. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. And I wish you the very best of the new year. Thank you so much. Cesar in Chicago. Hey, Cesar, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for answering my question. Yeah, I just want to give you a little fun fact, too, and the rest of the smart listeners out there, about January 6th. Mm-hmm. It's actually a very important Catholic holiday for us.
It's an epiphany.
Especially in Latin America. Mm-hmm. We celebrate Rosca de los Reyes, which means pretty much like the Day of the Three Kings when they visited newborn Christ.
Right.
And what we do is we have a large oval bread that's adorned with a lot of candy. And inside the bread, the baker, they put in three little figurines, like baby Jesus figurines.
Uh-huh.
And everybody or families, we get together and we cut pieces. And if you're fortunate enough to get one of these little baby Jesus, it's supposed to bring you good luck.
Wow.
Because the three people who get, are fortunate enough, fortunate enough to get it, they all pull together and they all... They pay for a small, not a feast, but it's like a small meal, which includes our chocolate with champurrado, our chocolate and tamales. So we all get together on February 2nd, and that's also a very important day. I can't think of why. It's a Candlemas day in February 2nd. If it lands in the weekend, it's kind of a big feast. Uh-huh. Other than that, it's just getting together and having a small dinner, but it's celebrated almost any Mexican-American it's actually a very, very important day, and unfortunately it was overshadowed last year with the insurrection, but it's a very traditional Catholic holiday, January 6th.
Thank you for educating me, Cesar. I wonder how pervasive that is in other cultures. My grandmother, I remember when my father's mother was alive, telling me about a holiday, and I frankly don't remember the holiday that she, as a child, celebrated, where there was a coin baked in some kind of food, and whoever found the coin, you know, in the food had good luck or got to keep the coin. I guess the little kids got to keep the coin, but I don't remember any other details beyond that. I don't think it had anything to do with Catholicism. In fact, I suspect that my father's mother might have been Jewish, or was Protestant. You know, was from Norway. But that's fascinating, Cesar. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. It's great to hear from you, Alan in Winnipeg, Manitoba, in Canada. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, we up north here. We love your show too.
Well, thank you. My daughter was in Quebec City for Christmas and New Year's. In fact, they're flying home tonight because their flight got canceled. But her husband is Canadian, or was.
They say New York never sleeps. Try Montreal.
Yeah. Oh, Montreal is such a beautiful city. I love Montreal. I've never been to Winnipeg.
And it's a party town. Well, you have to come up here and visit our polar bears up north, too.
Yeah.
In Churchill, but I reside sometimes in California, too, where I'm originally from, but I'm calling. There's a kind of a tweet that's kind of going a little bit viral right now from an Austrian woman who lived in Austria when Hitler was able to take over successfully without firing a gun, she pointed out. The point of her speech was the Austrians elected at the time when they had a plebiscite about whether they should join up with the Germans. 98% voted in favor, and she pointed out that one of the reasons was the news and the propaganda just avoided talking about what was really happening in Germany. They didn't hear any of the news about the oppression and any of the news about the violence and the deaths and the concentration camps being set up. She said they were fed a steady stream of lies. And I'm looking at the Republican Party. They're pulling the same playbook. I mean, let's face it. The people that are following them right now and following their line of thinking, they listen to, as the former press secretary for Trump said, they have alternative facts.
Yes.
So they're being fed. History is repeating itself. And if we don't do something about it, we all know that if they get in power again, you think they're going to not change the rules even more, and they flaunt the rules, and they seem to always be able to bend the rules to favor them. They don't follow the the filibuster when it came time to ram through all their not Senate seats, all their Supreme Court seats.
Yeah, and all their
I don't understand the Democrats.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. If we don't play hardball, we're going to end up just like the Austrians and the rest of the world. We're going to get taken over by the current fascist party called the Republicans.
Yeah,
the Republican,
it's kind of like the Florida Anschluss is happening right now. I'm with you, Alan, and until the Republican Party recommits itself to the values, what used to be what were referred to by the founders as the Republican values, small r, you know, the values of democracy, of majority rule, of the rule of law, until they recommit themselves to that, or commit themselves to that for the first time since the 1980s, we just have to fight them as absolutely hard as we can under, you know, every circumstance, politically, obviously, to keep this country free.
Well, yeah, we can't hold our breath to wait for them. Believe me, the majority of them are already in the beer hall, ready to, you know, line up the coup, so...
Yeah.
We better fight.
Yeah, and
they
did it a year ago. Alan, thank you. Thanks for listening to us on SiriusXM up there in Winnipeg, and thanks for the call. Nice to hear from Canada.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Speaking the truths, the oil industry would really rather you didn't know. Jill in West Collingsworth Heights, New Jersey. Hey, Jill, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. Just an idea for your tree. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll make Louise happy. I started last year. I got programmable lights. And during the Christmas season, I have it all decorated for Christmas. And then yesterday, actually, I took all the Christmas ornaments off, changed it to white lights, and I have crystal icicles only.
Oh, so it's a winter tree.
It's a winter tree.
That's a great idea, Jill. I like that. I like that a lot. That's what you wanted to share. That's fascinating. Thank you so much for that, Jill.
Oh, you're welcome. I hope she likes it.
I hope so, too. I'll find out when I get home.
All right.
Jill, thanks a lot. Jerry in Huntington Beach, California. Hey, Jerry, thanks for listening to KPFK. What's up?
Well, I listen every day, Tom. And I know that you're in favor of the Build Back Better bill. And there's a lot of good stuff, and I can see why you're in favor of it. But there's things that there's several things that I don't like about it. I'll name a couple of them. My fear is that this promise of raising taxes to pay for it is not going to happen. I don't think they're ever going to raise anybody's taxes. That's just not going to happen. And
it's part of the bill.
Well, I realize
if the bill gets passed, it's the law, and it's all it is doing is reversing some of, you know, part of Trump's tax cuts. That's all it's doing.
I understand that, but the problem is that the bill's not finalized yet, is it? That could be cut out or modified somehow.
If it passes in its current form, the one that is sitting on Chuck Schumer's desk, if that passes the Senate, it goes to the president and it becomes law. If the Senate chooses to modify it in any way, which is extremely likely. Given that Joe Manchin is doing his I'm really the president routine here. If it gets modified in any way, then it goes back to what's called a conference committee, which will be a group, typically 6, 8, 10 people. I'm not sure if it's fixed by law, policy or rules, or if they come up with it on an ad hoc basis. Frankly, I don't know. But there will be a group of Democrats a group of members from the House and a group of members from the Senate who will get together. And they will reconcile the differences between those two, and then that piece of legislation will essentially be reintroduced simultaneously into the House and Senate and voted on, and typically it's just a pro forma thing. It passes and it goes to the president.
Okay, well, let's assume that stays in. Okay, I'll grant you that. But the other thing is, this bill, like any other bill in Washington, this one may be even more so, a bill that size, it's probably just loaded down with pork. It's unbelievable. It doesn't even have anything to do with what the bill is intended to do. And then you got the deficit to worry about.
Well, hang on just a second, Jerry. What's the pork?
Concerned about that. What's the pork?
And this has nothing to do with the deficit. Am I talking to a Republican here? This has nothing to do with the deficit.
No, you're talking to a lifelong Democrat.
Okay, cool. So what's the pork that you don't like?
I don't know. The pork is in the details.
You don't know
the details,
Jerry. Yeah. You're going to call me up and complain about a piece of legislation. And
does anybody know what's in it?
I'm going to move along. Morris in Long Beach. Hey, Morris, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, let me tell you something, everybody. Look here. If you want to make some money for your business, buy your ads right now, because when that select committee puts Donald Trump under that deposition, everybody in the world is going to be watching. If you're a nonprofit agency, you might be able to get a discount. I was watching Trump's deposition under the university fiasco that he had. Mm-hmm. Listen, Tom, it's a skill set asking questions.
Yeah,
it is. And I'm watching what's going on, and this guy was so good. And I'm telling you, when Mr. Trump, former president of the United States, gets in front of this select committee with the evidence that they have, it's going to be first-class entertainment. One thing shocked me, man, almost knocked my knee. New York City was going to succeed with the South.
Yeah, the mayor of New York proposed that New York join the South and secede. He was voted down by the city council, but it was a serious proposal and had widespread support because Wall Street made so much money on cotton. It actually happened. Morris, I'm sorry you're fading out there, but it actually happened. It's in my book, The Hidden History of American Oligarchy, if you want a source for it. In there, you'll find all the footnotes. Morris, great to hear from you, and Happy New Year. Catherine in Burlington, Vermont, my old stomping grounds. Hey, Catherine, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You talked earlier about security. securing the vote and voter suppression. And I wanted to say, when I heard that, I had to call you and say, I've been hearing about that since elementary school, and I'm 61. Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, while we discuss these things, there are millions of people who need real aid. Mm-hmm. Now, not tomorrow, right here, right now.
Yes.
And we need to have FDR's second Bill of Rights implemented, wherein all necessities are covered, food, right, rent, clothing, etc.
And health care, yes.
And health care. We need that ASAP, national security level.
You know, Germany has that at the level of constitutional law.
Yes. And you right to life, liberty, and on and on.
Yeah.
And imagine a world, Tom, where we each own ourselves 100%. And let's say you're working for the government. You're not forced into it. They can't own you. You are offering a service, and they are offering you something in return that you agree to and that's fair and just.
Sounds like a good idea to me. I'm
yes,
concerned about the...
Yes, that point. Can we all now focus on being 100% owning ourselves 100%? And I've got backup for that. In the Bible and in the Torah, in the Old Testament, it states, Psalm 82, verse 6, ye are all gods.
Yeah.
And in John...
I think it says, is it not written, you're all gods? Yeah, no, I'm familiar with
John,
that, Catherine.
Is it not written in your book of law?
Right.
Yeah, yeah, Jesus brought it up.
Yeah.
And he wasn't saying, I'm God and you're just people. He said, we're all gods. Yeah. Here's the deal.
Yeah, we're all entitled to a basic level.
That I know of, the Jewish sector, knew about that.
Oh, I think this is, you know, to a large extent, this worldview, you know, that you're expressing, Catherine, is the foundation of every major religion and certainly much of contemporary Judaism. Catherine, thank you so much for the call. I've got to move along. Gary in Alpharetta, Georgia. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind?
Happy New Year, Mr. Hartman.
Thank you. Back at you.
Thank you. Well, here we are again. Quickly, it's 2020, and we're talking about, I bet you've never heard me say this before, our core problem called greed.
Yep. Greed has no heart.
I just had to call because I've been listening to Free Speech TV. And America has to be more, and we need to educate our younger people to this.
Mm-hmm.
The core problem that America has to be more, they may kind of know it, but I'm not so sure it's getting a foothold.
Yeah.
I don't think it is. It's more... America's more than greed, ego, and trying to be famous.
Yeah.
And I need to quote FDR. Government can err. Presidents can make mistakes, but we are told that divine justice weighs the sins of the cold-blooded and the sins of the warm-hearted on a different scale. Better the occasional fall of a government living in the spirit of charity than the consistent omissions of a government frozen in the ice of its own indifference. That's the answer.
Amen. And one of his best quotes. Gary, thank you so much. It's great to hear from you. Happy New Year. Joe in Detour Village, Michigan. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, you know, earlier you said, what would we have done if we truly believed our election had been stolen?
Yeah.
And, hey, I was a union rep in 2000, and we went to a convention in D.C. in early 2001, right after we really believed that George Bush stole that election.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't riot. We were mad. Oh, my God. Teddy Kennedy was at that convention, and I was sitting very close to him, and I wanted to say something to him about it, but we were just all fuming. We didn't even have words to express how angry, but we didn't riot.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And that was, I think, the beginning of the destruction of the credibility of the Supreme Court. That was when, you know, Americans really fully realized that the Supreme Court had become a political body, when they stopped.
I know, it destroyed how I looked at things. We left the union. We left town. Yeah. We started over out in the wilderness in Detour Village.
Yeah. Well, I get it, Joe. And that's a good point. And I'm not sure what lessons to draw from it, but because I think the big difference was that, and many of us fought that, by the way. And in fact, I'm trying to remember which member of Congress it was who stood up and objected. I'm sorry, I don't. But there, you know, somebody objected, mm-hmm. and basically Al Gore, you know, gaveled the Senate at the time. And he said, you know, we're not recognizing your objection. George Bush is the president. So basically, we decided to just go along with it. In this case, what was different was that the sitting president, and at that time, Al Gore was the sitting vice president, didn't acknowledge that, frankly, that the election had been stolen from him legally by the Supreme Court. And I think the legally by the Supreme Court part is the critical part. But
yeah.
I'm totally with you, Joe. I don't know where to go beyond that, but I'm with you. Joe, thank you. Thank you for the call. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll continue the conversation. Same time, same place. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It's something that you've got to participate in. So share the good word about progressive media. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.